It's not like O.J. Simpson was the leader of the civil rights movement of his era. You know, he wasn't a social justice leader, but he represented something for the black community in that moment, in that trial, particularly because there were two white people who had been killed. And the history around how black people have been persecuted during slavery, there were just so many layers. Oh. And I guess I would just close with this, is that
okay.
There was racial tension then, there is racial tension now. It might not be the backdrop of the Trump campaign, but until this country is ready to actually have an honest conversation about the racial dynamics from our origin story till today, we will always have moments like O.J. Simpson that manifest, and our country will always be divided if we don't actually deal with the issue of race.
Nonstop 24/7 isn't dealing with it, I guess. Every day, all day. We is so damn tired. Ugh.
The journalism industry is overrun with elite, underqualified, rich, entitled nepo babies.
How are you, baby? How old are you?
I don't know. I don't know.
People should not be walking around with masks.
Russian disinformation. Russian disinformation.
You're stewards.
It's nice to see that the entire Democratic coalition and mainstream media has at least arrived at the honest position that activists had for, I guess, the last, 30 years? That, yeah, of course he did it. Everybody knows he did it. But they were white people, so what? This was kind of one of these fringy things that was out there for the last few years. And now it's mainstreamed by analysts and pundits and race baiters at places like The Atlantic and CNN. That's right. O.J. Simpson murdering two affluent white people in Brentwood, California is revenge for slavery in the Deep South. This is literally what they are peddling to you on television. Yeah, you know, he did it. Everyone knows he did it. But so what? Because they were white people who, maybe even if we were to go back and check the DNA of Nicole Brown Simpson, maybe just scrape it off the sidewalk, maybe their family even owned slaves. And Ron Goldman was a Jew, so, you know, we know how we feel about those people these days. So, hey, they had it coming. Jamil Hill at The Atlantic finally, of course, weighed in on this. I'm not going to spend too long on this because that was last week, but I wasn't here Friday. I'll get into that in a second. But Jamil Hill is over at The Atlantic with basically the same take, that when you say to us, O.J. Simpson deserved to get away with it, why? Well, because of how black people have been treated in this country since its founding. That's not justice. That's not even restorative justice. That's not even racial justice. This is pure psychopathy, that we should be allowed to murder you because of what happened to us prior to the Civil War of the United States. And this is something that is being pushed at the most progressive liberal elite publication in this country. So I guess the good news is at least they're being openly honest about where we're at. What is this conversation we're supposed to be having exactly? Are we not having this conversation one-sided every day, all day, pretty much since November of 2008? Because if we're having a conversation, and I'm not just Jake Tapper nodding along to this woman on CNN, I would flat out just call her a psychopath. And ma'am, your skin color has nothing to do with your position that O.J. Simpson or any person should be able to get away with murder because you agree or disagree with the color of the skin of the victims and the perpetrator. And maybe that's what they want. No more punishment for any racial crimes that go one way ever again. It certainly feels that way. It also certainly feels they're not quite up to admitting that part of it, but this is an interesting position that you are being thought or made to take seriously. O.J. Simpson's trial was not a trial about race, and Christopher Darden even warned the judge about that, that if you allow this defense to enter in this line of argument when this was a whole debate, then this doesn't become about right or wrong, or one man suspected of murdering two people. It becomes about black and white, and it will divide exactly how it happened. And the judge allowed it. And you have an entire progressive coalition of journalists who I don't think were all even alive when this happened, who have decided that it was fine. Like I said, Mark Lamont Hill, and I said this at the time last week, that is one of the most openly honest posts where all of them are just going to silently nod along with it because they agree with it, that O.J. Simpson was an abuser, a serial abuser, a monster, a criminal, and a murderer, allegedly. But that's okay because the people he killed were white, and it was revenge for how African Americans have been railroaded through the justice system all through history. O.J. Simpson's murdering his ex-wife had nothing to do with race. It had nothing to do with skin color. It was a crime of passion. It was a crime of jealousy. Skin color played no part in it. So if this is what you're attaching to that crime and this whole narrative and this discussion that we're supposed to be having about race, ma'am, you're a psychopath. You're attaching your own psychopathic motivations to a crime that had nothing to do with race. It was passion. But it sure does explain a lot about how Johnny Cochran was allowed to be an invited guest to Bill Clinton's inauguration. I wrote as much at Spectator last week. It's April 16th. Thursday night, I was getting ready to go see my trainer. I've decided to get back into personal training a bit. I've kept all my weight up, but I'm starting to lose a little bit of gains, just toning I've noticed that I've lost, and that was one of the most expensive and painful things I've ever done in my life, and I don't want to see it go to waste. So I'm kind of getting back into it. I'm seeing a different trainer at a different gym. And Thursday night, I'd finished recording, I'd done all of that. I was literally in my training gear, my garb, my wardrobe, what have you. I had my turf shoes on, whatever, had my towel and my water bottle, and I was literally headed out the door when I got this, like, really severe, I don't want to say painful, but severe cramping and bloat, like, in my lower left side. And it was one of those, like, what did I eat? Well, I'm changing my diet a bit while I get back into this. I've talked about on this podcast my penchant for SpaghettiOs. I have never given them up as a child. It is the one kind of treat slash junk food that if I see it walking past a grocery store, there's a can or two coming home with me. And so I had this kind of protein pack before and during my podcast, which is like a hard-boiled egg and some almonds and some cranberries and some apple slices, some cheese, whatever. And then I thought, oh, I'm still kind of hungry and I got to go work out. So how about I just dive into that can of SpaghettiOs? And so shortly after, about an hour or whatever, I got this thing where I was like, ooh, like I'm headed for the door. And then I'm like, I got to go lay down. This is weird. And it hit me pretty hard through Friday, all through, you know, I slept through it. I was able to sleep on it, but there was a little bit of pain pressure when I slept on my left side. And then it hit me pretty much Friday, fever and everything else. I couldn't really even sit at my desk long enough. And so I had to call off the podcast, and I thought, I'll try to get to this Saturday. And Saturday was also a no-go. I felt better, but it was still kind of in my system, whatever it was. And I'm not going to go into all the inner workings and gross details of the plumbing of Stephen L. Miller here. But as it so turns out, and Sunday I felt better, less pressure, less gas buildup, whatever. But it was like pretty prominent. I could push on my side, and it would just like be a cramping sensation. I was okay enough to skate last night, and one of the good news about having a doctor on your team, and specifically a gastroenterologist who can specifically diagnose these things without me having to drop hundreds of dollars on a doctor. So I just asked him, like, God, I got this thing, and it like kind of laid me out. It wasn't a pain. It wasn't like I thought maybe it was a kidney stone, and he's like, no, that's diverticulitis. I'm like, okay, am I going to die? And he's like, no, it'll pass. Just like eat plain foods and, you know, adjust your diet a bit and quit crying. So that's pretty much what we think happened. Obviously, it's not like Dr. Nick Riviera, you know, sticking his hand up my butt in the locker room or anything. But But everything that I described is what he said it probably is. So it's just a change in diet. I've talked about how I've had severe reflux over the years, and I pretty much fixed that when I went into training and I lost some weight. So this is basically just it'll go away naturally and stop eating SpaghettiOs. When you grow up, your heart dies. Breakfast Club. I was going to talk a little bit more, I plan to at least today or this week, about the ongoing quote-unquote fallout happening at NPR, because it seems their CEO, who just took over last month, has some questionable posts in her past. And right now you have journalists bemoaning canceling and cancel culture that political right and activists and people such as myself are now trying to get her canceled. Well, this is not how cancel culture works, folks. And anyone in journalism bemoaning cancel culture can pretty much go stick it right where the monkey puts the nuts, because they created cancel culture. The BuzzFeedification, the K-Files. These people literally created cancel culture. The journalists going after forklift operators for making funny videos about Nancy Pelosi in the hopes of getting them to stop doing those things. Or threatening to dox guys who make GIFs from Reddit. These people literally created what is known as cancel culture. Tattling on employers up because of people's tweets or posts or actions or political supports that they don't like. And now they got one of their own. And suddenly it's bad. Whatever you do, don't use our own tactics against us. This blew up over the weekend with a woman named Catherine Marr, who, like I said, just took over as the CEO of NPR. It has now spiraled into a full-blown scandal, and we're going to find out just how much this attitude of one for all and all for one, with journalism as our pillar of free speech and the First Amendment, and we all stand together. We're gonna put that one to the test, because we woke up to the news this morning that Yuri Berliner has been suspended by NPR, and I'm going to go into each aspect of this. Also, Steve Inskeep, who is a longtime NPR stalwart, wrote a piece at Substack criticizing Berliner's points that he laid out at the Free Press. One of the reasons Berliner was supposedly suspended by Marr and NPR is that he did not get permission to go write for another outlet. And I'm wondering if that's even in his contract for NPR, if he's not allowed to go pen a piece for the Wall Street Journal. Or is it because of where he penned it and what he said? It's real hard to claim you support strong, independent diversity of thought in journalism while then suspending someone who criticized you at an outlet that you don't like. Steve Inskeep wrote at Substack criticizing Berliner, and I don't think that anything is going to happen to Steve Inskeep, and this is the entire point. Let's start out with Catherine Marr. When it was announced that she was a CEO at NPR, she has never held a job at any media outlet. So that should be telling you something. She wrote in her Twitter bio here, Web Summit boss lady, previously CEO of Wikimedia, now various places, human curiosity, generosity, and dignity. She, her. Lovely. She wrote on her last tweets and posts, big news. I'm delighted to announce that I will be taking up the position of CEO of NPR starting in late March. NPR has been a lifelong part of my soundscape, and I credit its reporting with sparking my curiosity that set me onto the path to become the person I am today. She says that NPR represents so much of what I believe. The importance of civic institutions, high-quality public information, and our universal human inclination to curiosity. I couldn't be more excited to join this incredible institution and essential mission. My first day is March 25th. Unreal. Sadly, it does mean I'll be stepping down as Web Summit CEO on March 1st. I absolutely love my time with Web Summit. I've been bowled over by this team's talent, energy, and frankly, general good vibes. And this appreciation has only grown with each passing week. She says, I will be staying on the board of directors and will remain as CEO to deliver our first event in the Middle East. Web Summit Qatar in the end of February, which is looking to be double the size. You should come. Yeah, you should come to Qatar, however you want to pronounce it. That sounds like a fun trip. Marr was basically outed as not only a Joe Biden Kamala Harris supporter. She has tweets and posts saying she cried that night. She says, I can't wait to start holding the newest administration to account. Well, we're still waiting, Catherine. She says, it's so strange to be called a Biden supporter. I'm a supporter of human rights, dignity, and justice. Oh, that must be why you're excited in inviting people to fucking Qatar. Because of the human dignity, a place that has open slavery. Yeah. These were posts on election night, November 7th, 2020. Now, journalists openly cheering the Biden administration isn't really anything that should be a shock to anyone. And there are several posts of hers that are political in nature. The New York Times is trying to write off and saying, oh, she called Trump a racist, and that's what the problem is with the political right. But I'll get into some of her posts just to demonstrate exactly why Berliner is someone that was suspended. The one thing that is interesting is in November 1st of 2020, she posted a photo of herself in a Biden for President hat, and she's wearing a mask. And she says, the best part of Arizona get out the vote is my Biden grandpa hat. This is a woman who campaigned for and canvassed for Joe Biden. This is not just ideological bias. This is someone who actively worked to elect a president from a certain political party. And she is now the CEO of a supposed, I get it, independent and publicly funded news organization. This is kind of the entire point of what Yuri Berliner was writing about, that, yeah, certain biases will always exist, but NPR is leaning into knee-jerk activism. This woman is literally a knee-jerk activist. You've been listening to the Versus Media podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.